Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world is to come and don't you see?
Hello there and welcome. My name is Rick Spezak, News Director of Progressive News Network. And we want to welcome you to a lovely evening's entertainment tonight. I also want to bring on my co-host, the charming and talented Miss Gwendolyn Berry. Gwen, are you there?
I'm here. Is this me?
Yes, it is. Indeed.
Oh. Well, it's Gwen, great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Gwen is my co-host tonight, special guest co-host on this salute to Florida's progressive women. How you doing today, Gwen?
I'm doing great. Just got off the other show with the gang discussing America and the new eternal war. We're talking about drones and such over there. And then I get to come over here and actually be in the company of some pretty impressive ladies in the state of Florida. Not a bad day.
Not a bad day at all. You know, there's a wonderful book that Gore Vidal put together called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. And he lists about 47 hot conflicts between World War II and probably the late 90s. It's amazing how much of this kind of flies under America's radar. And unless you've got a family member under arms, so to speak, most people are just not aware. And it's a real shame. And unfortunately, with between the mercenaries and all this robotization and dronization of our armed services, unfortunately, the off-the-shelf standing army of that Ollie North and those boys dreamed of is now a reality.
Yeah, thanks to people like Cheney and Rumsfeld. And if you go over and you check out David's his post, it's incredibly shocking. It gives you the new joint strategies that are capable by a president who has no oversight whatsoever. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but the drone attacks since President Obama has taken office has risen almost 100-some-odd%. It's incredible. And the other really, really incredible thing is to think that perhaps someone like Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann would have their finger on that kind of power.
Well, it's a sobering stuff, that's for sure. Let me take care of a little bit of housekeeping first. But before I do that, Gwen, I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about your show. In case they have not yet heard about your shows, go ahead, tell our listeners about your shows and when and where they can get to them.
Well, I'm right here on Blog Talk Radio along with you, Progressive News Network, and basically we are a uber liberal, if you were, and even radical at times. Here Be Monsters is the name of the show. We talk about politics and what's going on in the moment, and it's. We go from one extreme to the other, bringing up awareness on the issues that are ongoing, especially concerning the environment. I also have another show on Thursday evenings, which is more anchored in the metaphysical or spiritual community, if you will. But we also talk about what the challenges are to our environment in general. And these are, you know, Blog Talk Radio shows, so they're national, and actually they cross even larger borders than that. Anybody anywhere with a computer can listen into us, can't they?
That's right. That's right. So I just wanted audience to know that Gwen has two amazing shows on, and if you like what you hear, and I know you're going to do that, you need to listen to Gwen's shows too. I want to kind of run down our lineup for tonight. I think we've got Kit Rafferty of Jobs for Justice joining us tonight. Also, Susanna Randolph of Florida Watch. Also, those of you who know Florida's progressive scene know about the uterus campaign. Well, that's one of Susanna's brain children. And also, we've got Imine Dillick of the women's right activist, a columnist, a writer, and a webcaster also. And we've got Chris Costello of the Sierra Club joining us. And, of course, my lovely and talented co-host, Gwen Berry, activist extraordinaire, woman of great depth and spiritual insight. You know, Gwen, I one of the things I liked about your shows is they combine not only a good progressive politics, in my opinion, but also a great spiritual and a mystical center as well. And so many of us in the progressive movement come from a background where we've gone beyond the old formal religions and have found a new way and a new path. Sometimes it's called New Age. Sometimes it's not. It has something to do with something very, very old. I used to joke that, yeah, you know, if you're a druid, you know something about the old-time religion.
Yes, exactly.
But
ancestral.
I need to also mention the Media Goddess Worldwide, a public relations firm who's one of our major sponsors, and of course my co-producer, Mickey Royce, and also Imagineering Productions, which is a web media and SEO services company, also our other sponsor. So please, if you like what you hear, make sure you find out about the Media Goddess Worldwide and Imagineering Productions, the SEO and web media companies. So, Gwen, listen, you know, we've got such a, if you'll forgive the Rumsfeldian metaphor, such a target-rich environment for progressives right now. One of the things going on is the occupation of Wall Street, which is very important.
It is. You know, the group Anonymous with other activist groups triggered that well over a month ago and began putting it out on the web. I don't know if folks are realizing that. You know, Anonymous, the group that works with as a backup to WikiLeaks.
Right, right.
They have actually been, since the 1st of September, a few of them every day go and make their stand on Wall Street itself.
And, of course, there's been no mention of them whatsoever in corporate media. Can't say that I'm terribly surprised there. But
I actually called CNN today to say, hey, are y'all covering the Wall Street protest yesterday? Because over 1,000 people showed up, and it was probably more than that. They're RTTV, do you know what I'm talking about?
Right,
I think
right,
it's called Russian television.
Uh-huh.
They did. They covered it nicely. Of course, Al Jazeera covered it nicely, too. But American media is, of course, not covering it. And Mayor Bloomberg shut down Wall Street at the wall there so that they could not march into in front of, you know, the market and have that backdrop for themselves. Do you know what they were saying, Rick, up and down the street as they were marching?
No, go ahead.
They were saying banks got bailed out and we got sold out.
Well, unfortunately, that's sadly true. Our community activist president made sure that his friends in the banks were covered, but somehow he forgot that the people who were really hurt by all those all that mortgage speculation were the people who now are sitting on homes that are nowhere near the value that they were forced to pay for them. And it's one of those heads you lose, tails you lose sort of games that all too often is played with us. And despite the big bailout for the banks and credit card companies, well, guess what? They still yank the prices up and the rates up, right? And are paying nothing on interest. Another sad and difficult topic is that, and I know you're well aware of this, the ongoing crisis in the Gulf, which, of course, the Coast Guard seems to take no notice of, and BP denies as well. It's just the citizen journalists and the scientific community that have noticed these the continued leakage into the Gulf.
Well, and you've got to remember, too, that much of the scientific and even academic now community, you will remember that we have Koch brothers in and out of town buying up university schedules the syllabus for a curriculum. It's just awful that BP has the kind of money it takes to put the heavy hand of glossing it all over onto the University of Florida, NOAA. And this is in complicity with our government, too. How else can the United States Coast Guard stand there and say that, well, okay, we have reports of this and that, but it isn't what you are saying? The report came out last week, and they put primary blame amongst BP, Transocean, Halliburton. However, we've seen that happen before, haven't we, with Exxon Valdez and some
others. That's right.
This is just propaganda, and it's the only kind of media that's really been allowed out there on the large microphones, if you will, on television and whatnot. And we have Chris Costello from the Sierra Club on. Sierra Club works very hard, especially in Mississippi and along the Gulf Coast states, to help try and fund people to get out there and take a citizen-inspired. And you can talk to Linda St. Martin, you should, about the citizen-inspired calibrations of how deep the oil is getting in there. People are going out and photographing and taking their own test results. People are collecting water now that's coming ashore filled with Brexit and crude and bringing it to independent sources to have it tested. And, of course, the government poo-poos all of it. But the Sierra Club is doing their best in that territory, along our panhandle all the way into Louisiana, to help fund people to get to where they need to go to just make all of these tests and stuff.
And one of your guests recently, Sherry, is it Fontaine?
It's Cherie Foytlin. It's Cherie Foytlin. When she isn't being arrested right now in front of the White House trying to stop the XL pipeline from Canada on down to Louisiana, y'all know about that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are being arrested on that one. She is being arrested for, bringing awareness to what is ongoing in our Gulf and to the nature of what responsibility has to be taken for it and to begin somewhere, somehow. You know, there isn't anything being done right now to help clean up the environment. There is nothing being done. Can you imagine?
Well, Gwen, you know, as a matter of fact, they told us it disappeared. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
All that Corexit, all that oil just disappeared. Well, listen, Gwen, I've got our next guest is ready in the pipeline to bring her on. Let's bring on Susanna Randolph. Susanna, welcome.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Very good, very good. We want to welcome you very warmly for all the fine work that you're doing. Susanna, what's new? What can you tell us? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am the executive director of Florida Watch Action, which is a nonprofit that is dedicated to being the progressive communications hub in the state of Florida. And we do a lot of work around messaging, progressive messaging, branding of conservative opponents, and a lot of accountability with regard in the way of messaging. We do a lot of accountability around our sitting elected officials. So we kicked off a campaign that we're probably most well-known for. We were in one of the three groups that was kind of involved at a statewide level with Awake the State. So we worked with our great friends at Progress Florida and America Votes to help coordinate things statewide, even though the local organizers really did most work. We just kind of helped to make things more unified and on message. But then we kicked off a campaign on April 1st of this past year called the Pink Slip Brick Campaign, and it's a campaign that's dedicated at really highlighting the job-killing anti-middle-class policies of Governor Rick Scott. We knew coming in he was going to be not a friendly person, not a friendly governor to the middle class. We knew that he had some very radical ideas on going after middle-class jobs throughout the state, so we decided that we were going to get out there and tell everybody what he was doing, watchdog all the things he was doing, and make sure that we told the real story on what his job is doing, his job performance is. So that's what we do.
Well, you're doing just a fantastic job. I was going to ask you, can you tell us just a little bit about how you transformed yourself from just a one more intelligent citizen to a citizen activist? What was your transition?
Well, my transition was actually in college. I have parents who were pretty active, and my mom went back to school when I was in elementary school, and she hadn't had a chance to get her college degree, so she went back to school, and she was on the I don't know how my mom did it, but she had me and my sister to raise. My dad traveled a lot during the week, and then she went back to school, got her degree, but then was also on the newspaper staff of the college newspaper, and she studied journalism and would expose a lot of things going on campus in the community. And so we kind of learned a little bit at my mom's side about, you know, how important it was to be politically involved. And so I went on to college at Florida State, where I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said that's wonderful. She's the hand of the goddess.
Oh, I know, right? Like, she's the kind of woman I can't ever think I could be, because she just did so much, and I don't even know how she did it. But I went out to college at Florida State, and then I joined up with the PIRG chapter, the Public Interest Research Group, and it's an organization that did environmental consumer community work, and did a lot of work walking up the 10 blocks to the Capitol and doing lobbying on environmental issues like stopping offshore drilling. And so I kind of learned through them how to do activism and how to lobby and hold press conferences and rallies. And once I got my teeth into that, I decided that's pretty much what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So in a nutshell,
that happened. Your mom left you some pretty big sandals to fill then.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Well, listen, what are you working on now? What's coming up?
Well, we're continuing to work on the Pink Slip Brick campaign, but we're expanding it, and I'm actually really excited about this. As you guys probably know, we've had some real success in labeling the governor a job killer. Our main goal kind of on the outset was to, because this governor was so unpopular and taking such drastic steps to go after the middle class, you know, our goal was to really, show that the rest of Florida wasn't in line with his agenda. And the best way to really demonstrate that and show that you're moving the needle is through his poll numbers, his approval, disapproval numbers. So we are really committed to, as long as he continues to embrace this job-killing anti-middle-class agenda, we want to show that the rest of Florida doesn't approve of that, and we want to show that his poll numbers are really bad. So we're actually right now very happy to report that we've been able to create such a backlash with lots of friends and partners, and sometimes with the help of Rick Scott himself, which is great. We've actually been able to have, he's the least popular governor in the entire country, and because of the backlash, we've been able to help bring about. And we took his poll numbers. His poll numbers were at 31% approval, 22% disapproval on February 2nd. And then at the end of May, or I'm sorry, the end of June, they were at 33% approval, 59% disapproval. So we took his disapproval numbers from 22% to 59%. And that's really important because when you have somebody who's embracing such a horrible agenda that's hurting so many people, like 982,000 people out of work, and he continues to go after workers, especially government workers, teachers, firefighters, cops, and when he continues to embrace that agenda, we want to show that that is not popular, Floridians are not going to stand for it, and you are going to pay a big price in the polls for that. So far, so good. So that's what I would say.
That's fantastic.
We're about to expand our campaign into the Spanish-speaking world because we're about to take our branding campaign, and we are putting together an entire Spanish-speaking campaign to partner with Pink Slip Bricks so that we can be talking to our friends who don't speak English, and particularly those folks in the I-4 corridor who, in general, we haven't reached out to that well as progressives throughout the course of a recent history. So we're reaching out now. We're going to get an early start on talking about who this governor is to that community. So
that's fantastic. Listen, I want to ask you, I've got my next guest queued up, but if you have the time to stick around, we're going to have some time after E-Mine and then Chris speak for a little bit of round robin. So if you could stay with us, that'd be great. Let me bring on E-Mine, okay?
Sure.
Thanks so much, Susanna. I really appreciate having you on.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good evening and welcome, E-Mine.
Hi. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Very good. Am I pronouncing your name right?
It's close. It's Emine, actually. It's just like Emine, the chocolate.
Okay.
Yes, it's Emine.
Well, thank you, Emine. I certainly appreciate that, and I apologize.
No problem.
Emine, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your work, and then we're going to get together a little bit of a round-robin conversation toward the end. So please tell our listeners about yourself and about your work, okay?
Sure. I'm currently the Vice President of Communications for the local National Organization for Women, Palm Beach County Chapter. I'm also a member of the Global Feminist Strategies and Issues Committee. So we do a lot of global feminist work and cover global issues relating to women around the world. We work with the United Nations and other international organizations. I also write for two news magazines, one called Woman's Views on News. It's an England-based, UK-based news service covering only women's news from around the world. I'm also a contributing editor for Addicting Info. I would like all your listeners to go to Addicting Info and subscribe and read about them. It's an amazing news organization online, very, very progressive. And you
Wonderful.
Will find the current news about, you know, what's going on. I also write as a columnist for a local magazine called Palm Beach Woman. It's a print magazine. We also have an online site. It's a big business magazine for women, similar to Forbes Woman. Of course, I also produce and host a radio show called Woman's Voice. You know me about that. Woman's Voice, our show is online, Blog Talk. We have a little bit over 7,000 listeners from around the world. And it's on Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard. And just like your show, it can be listened from anywhere around the world just by a click, as long as you have a computer and a phone. So this is what I do. A lot.
Well, that's really wonderful. We've got some other guests on, and like I said, we're going to do a little bit of a round robin. We've also got Susanna Randolph of Florida Watch, and
mm-hmm.
we've got Gwen Berry, also a progressive host, and we'll be bringing on Chris Costello in just a little bit. So, Emine, let me ask you this.
Sure.
One of the questions I always like to ask my progressive guests is, you know, most of us have to work so hard just to kind of keep our heads above water and do for our friends, for our family, and keep our lives together. But then most of us, or all of us here, have also found time somehow to become progressive activists, to do something, to add something to the world. What took you from being just a good citizen to a citizen activist? Could you talk a little about that?
Well, one thing is I'm myself a very opinionated person, and I like to express myself, and it was very important for me to enjoy my freedom in the United States because I grew up in Turkey. I was born there and moved to the United States in 1993, and I found that here I can actually say what I think and not be jailed for it. So, and then when I realized that, I said, I'm just going to use this to the, you know, best of my ability. It was very important for me, especially for a woman, to have a voice. And I found out as through my writing, actually, only 10 to 15% of the news coverage for the entire world's news coverage cover women's issues or women's stories, women's news, only 15%. So I said to myself, what can I do? And then I learned about online radio, and then I started writing Basically, just to provide a voice for women, first to provide a platform that they can actually tell their stories, and we learn about them and connect women, you know, American women. I found out that we were a very isolated country. We don't really know a lot. Actually, we didn't until the, you know, latest technology, internet. Before that, we were pretty isolated. We didn't know what was going on around the world to other women, how were their lives. So it was one of the ideals for me. I really wanted to connect women around the world, other women to United States, Americans, and Western women, so they can actually learn about each other and learn about their issues. So that's what prompted me.
Well, that's wonderful. Let me ask you a question. I teach a lot, and one of the classes I teach web design and web media and that sort of thing. And I have a new student from Egypt, and he was telling me that he had just gotten back from Egypt, and I asked him what his thoughts were of what is being called euphemistically here in America the Arab Spring. And, you know, knowing, of course, that the real issues and the reality on the ground is so different and so much more complex than anything we can get in the media, I asked him for his opinion, his take on it, and he said he was very, very troubled. He said that, in his opinion, there's a great danger that the forces that will finally take power in Egypt are really those supported by the Saudis, and that he is in great fear that instead of freedom, what's going to happen is a strong Islamization. And I was wondering, from the people that you've talked to recently overseas, what kind of feeling you get, and especially what these transitions mean to women in the Middle East.
Okay. Well, that is definitely one of my and my friend's major concern, that we definitely do not want another Iran, you know, Islamic revolution basically happening in Egypt. And that was definitely not anticipated, you know, everyone, when we talked about, because there were women up front. Women really were majorly involved with the revolutions there. Actually, for Egypt, 21-year-old, I forgot her name, she was the one started the revolution. She posted a YouTube video online, and then from then on, the revolution started. So women were very, very involved. They got arrested. They got tortured. They got raped because of it. So it will be a shame, and it is definitely one of our concerns that the Muslim Brotherhood is getting, you know, stronger there. And I think maybe the international organizations or the other NGOs that can go and maybe support the process of democratization there, and the woman needs to get involved, definitely. There is only, I think, between 41 people that were involved in the starting of the new process of the government, there was only one woman, if I'm not mistaken. So it is definitely a major concern for me, for others that are have some knowledge of what's going on the ground there, and we need to support the woman. We need to support the woman, not just only in Egypt, anywhere from North Africa to Middle East, wherever these revolutions are happening, because unless the women are liberated and empowered and educated, democracy is not going to happen. It's just not going to survive.
Is the secular government of Turkey still bringing more freedom to Turkey, or has there been some slip back?
Actually, no. The current government, the Erdogan's administration, I personally am not very happy with them. They're definitely aligning themselves more and more with the more radicals and extremists, and Iran, Ahmadinejad, for example, they're closer to that. And I was actually very sad to see the relationship between Israel and Turkey, for example, deteriorating, because both sides are being kind of, you know, hardliners are speaking for each countries, because Israel and Turkey, we've been really good friends for long years. And Turkey is basically the first and only democracy, Muslim democracy, that has 99% Muslim population. And but the Erdogan's, the current prime minister or the president, we have prime ministers in Turkey, prime minister's administration is definitely more aligned with the Islamists in the country. Their base are the more, you know, the religious Islamists. But as far as the Turkey itself, the country itself, It was set up since 1920s. It was a secular country, and so there is really not a huge concern as far as it being turning into an Iran. But you never know. You never know. I mean, I had guests from Iran. I had a guest. She was born in Iran and grew up there, and then had to escape the United States. And she explained to me that it started as from the universities and then turn into this Islamic revolution and turn into this religious theocratic country. And so there is always a danger, there's always a threat, but I'm hoping it's not going to go there, but I'm really not that happy with the current administration in Turkey right now, yeah.
Sure, sure. So tell us, what is your focus right now? What are you working on? What's your current projects?
Well, our current projects, of course, with always the National Organization for Women, as I said, I am the member of the Global Feminist Committee. We work with, you know, United Nations and international organizations. One project that we couldn't get it passed, and I find it to be very, very important, and hopefully we're going to work harder on it this year and push it. It's called CEDAW, C-E-D-A-W. It's the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, and this is an international convention adopted in 1979 by UN. We, United States, we haven't ratified it yet, and we need to ratify. It's very important. Why is it important? I'm going to explain real quickly. For example, it's an international convention that can actually make a difference when women in our country have problem accessing justice. 1.5 million female employees of Walmart sued Walmart for sexual discrimination, for years of sexual discrimination, and they lost it on the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they lost at the Supreme Court level. For the reasons, I mean, it's a long story. You can check it online. Anyone can Google it and learn about it. But if we had CEDAW passed, ratified, these women could actually go to the international court and pursue further justice for themselves. So these international conventions and laws are very important. And one thing about GOP, most of the GOP in Congress, for example, they do not like international laws. They do not like United Nations. They do not like to – they actually wanted to cut all the funding for the United Nations because these international laws can override and oversee our laws. And, of course, they do not want that. But this convention is very important, and it's one of our major goals this year that we're going to be working on it. And anyone actually can go to National Organization for Women's site and learn more about it. And then we have a separate website. It's called ratifywoman.org. They can go there and then learn more about it. It's a very, very important international convention law that we need to get it ratified in our country.
Now, you're absolutely right, and it's a shame. It's such a shame that this country that's prided itself for so long on human liberty still mm-hmm. has no equal rights amendment, and fine women of this country still have no pay equity. Listen, I'm going to throw open the floor. Gwen, do you have any questions you'd like to ask these fine ladies?
Eminem, I was wondering if you work at all with Mona L. Oh God, I have such a hard time pronouncing her name. El Tosli, you remember the Egyptian journalist who was so forefront during the revolt when it was ongoing.
She's the one. She's the one that did that YouTube video. Yeah, no, actually, we do not have direct connection with her. What I forgot her name though. There was one lady that was. She's online on Facebook. She's on my connection list. She's the first candidate for female candidate for presidency in Egypt, And I got in touch with her campaign, and I wanted to support her, you know, and then, of course, gather more support from here locally and hopefully nationally. But she has been very quiet, and she writes in Arabic, so it's very difficult for me to read that. But no, not with the lady that you mentioned. I don't have direct connection with her. But Kamal, yeah, okay, the first female candidate for presidency, her last name is Kamal, K-E-M-A-L, and I was so hopeful when I heard that. I was like, okay, so maybe the first, you know, president of Egypt will be a woman, but I think she is kind of silenced in a way now with whatever is going on down there. But we need to really keep an eye on Egypt and make sure that women's rights are not, you know, sidelined, and there are enough women in the, you know, Congress. And of course, you know, when we talk about Egypt and other countries, we also need to remember that less than 20% of U.S. Congress are women as well. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do in our country as well.
I think the whole table will agree with that. I think it's fabulous what you're doing. And I wanted to ask all of the ladies who are in the room right now, how useful is the social networking online to what you're doing right now?
I can, you know, tell you that for my work, as far as the writing and the radio, all my I do my entire promoting and marketing through my social networks between Twitter, website, and my Facebook, which I have combined more than, you know, 3,000-4,000 people. I find it to be extremely critical and very, very helpful. It's hopefully Facebook, especially Facebook, will stay, you know, free and independent for another while, that you know, you can actually access to independent news or independent information, unbiased information, news. I think they're critical.
Susanna, is Susanna on with us still?
Yes.
Do you two find that Facebook and Twitter, as the major social networks, are important in communicating and actually strategizing what you do?
Yeah, and actually I would say that the Awake the State event that happened March 8th of this past year, the first day of session, I mean, we initiated that before we built a website or anything to enable that, before we even kind of knew whether that was going to get traction. We put together an Awake the State page. We have an Awake the State working group that is kind of ongoing. We are able to share documents, do planning through Facebook in particular. We've added a Twitter account to that that's been able to get out and build a humongous network across the state. On my Pink Slip Brick stuff, it's enormously important. We actually, with the Pink Slip Brick stuff, we have a partner Facebook page called Firing Rick Scott. So when you like it, it says, "I like Firing Rick Scott." We actually just
created important info.
Yeah, exactly. And so Firing Rick Scott, we just exceeded 18,000 fans yesterday. We're going for 20,000, but it's a way for us to really, when we have anything going on and he's coming into the area, we want people to give him pink slips, we can put that out and, you know, hopefully at some point 20,000 people will get that in their feed throughout Florida.
Well,
and
you
we'll
just got one more.
Susanna.
Okay, hey, that's me.
Susanna.
Okay,
Susanna, let me ask you a question.
I'm going to hit 20,000. So. Okay, I'm sorry, Rick. Go ahead.
That's okay. Did I understand correctly that you actually had a chance to physically hand a pink slip to him?
Oh, I've done it a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, I saw the footage of the donut shop. I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yeah, actually it was really funny because there was the St. Pete Times reporter, and I walk in, and he goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, of course, I'm here to give him a pink slip." And he said, "You're going to give him a pink slip?" And I said, "Yeah, why wouldn't I?" And he goes, I just don't understand. I'm like, "You're going to do it?" And I said, "Yeah, why wouldn't I?" And he just, it was so funny. He's the guy who snapped the photo that it went around Twitter like mad. I was out protesting right after that, and all of a sudden everybody was blowing up my Twitter account like, "I can't believe you gave a pink slip to the governor." And I'm like, "Well, again, why wouldn't I? Like, we all need to as much as possible." So it was really fun.
Susanna, let me ask you one more question. I am so fortunate. I had a wonderful mother. I have a wonderful wife. I have two wonderful daughters. And I just wonder, what is it going to take to get this political process in motion so that we get equal rights for women and equal pay? I mean, what do you think the barriers are right now?
Well, the barriers are, yeah, we need more women in office, I think, number one. And number two, we need more women to get more engaged and more angry. As you guys may or may not know, we have this kind of funny thing happen in session, during the course of session, where my husband actually gave a speech on the floor and used the word uterus, and was immediately reprimanded by the speaker to don't use the word uterus because,
yeah,
you know, there are underage.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I know, as if the word uterus is going to all of a sudden inspire teenage boys to go on some let's get every girl pregnant spree or something across the state. Uterus is probably the least sexy word you can use about a woman in general, I think. So in any case, it sparked this amazing uprising of women. It started a Facebook page called Uterus. We started a group called the Uterati. You know, women were just outraged. It was like the last straw. Because there were 18 anti-choice bills filed this past session,
yeah.
And on the same day they were talking about widespread deregulation of industry in our state, even when industry didn't want to be deregulated. Like in the example of interior designers, they said don't deregulate our industry, but Rick Scott and friends wanted to do that. At the same time, they want to impose regulations on women's uterus or uteri. And, you know, it was just kind of like, and then when my husband made this comparison, and we kind of joked around about we actually were at a progressive happy hour, and I said to Stephanie Kunkel, the lobbyist for Planned Parenthood, I said, you know, if I were just to incorporate my uterus tomorrow as a business in the state of Florida, maybe these guys would lay off, or maybe we could accuse them of over-regulating business. And so Scott got that in his head and then said, you know, if my wife were to incorporate her uterus, you all would lay off, you know, and that's when the whole thing happened. But you saw this uprising of women that was like no other. And so I think it's really given women kind of a new platform on which to really argue women's rights, which is like, you know, talking about one of our body parts is not a dirty word, and it's not a dirty thing to do. And I think it just really, it's amazing how many women really just went, like, just, it was the last straw for them. So I think when we can utilize moments like that to reinvigorate women and get them more engaged and more outraged, I think we can build the movement that will ultimately get us there, because it's absurd that we haven't passed ERA and that we have 18 anti-choice bills in the session. I mean, you know, it's just unbelievable. So we have to get them engaged and outraged and paying attention, and I think we can get that done. So,
May I, M&A, let me ask you a question. You talk to a lot of people overseas. We have more women running or pretending to run right now in the Republican primary system. A lot of certainly progressives have a very jaundiced opinion of these women. And I was wondering, what do you hear from overseas about candidate Bachmann, semi-candidate Palin? How do these people sound overseas? What do you hear anything about that, or is it too parochial, too much a U.S. interest?
No. Actually, people around the world, unlike us, but we're getting there, are very, very knowledgeable about what's going on around their world, in their planet, and especially the United States as being the only remaining superpower, basically. It's because what happens in the United States really affects everyone around the world. So people are definitely in tune what's going on right now. They know very well whatever's going on. And especially my female friends, a lot of them are very liberal feminists, you know, in Turkey. And they know about Sarah Palin and Bachmann, and they have the exact same opinions that I have, all of them. So it's not, I mean, that's what, as I was listening to your other guest, I forgot her name, I apologize. You know, we definitely do want more women in our political level, legislature, everywhere else, but we want progressive women. You know, we want women that are actually going to support the women's rights. Instead of, for example, Sarah Palin, I know when she was a governor, she made the females who were raped pay for their own rape kits. And then later I found out that I have a friend, she actually is a director of a rape center in west coast of Florida. She told me that you do not have to pay for that rape kit because the money that's collected for it, it's like a federal fund that comes from the traffic tickets or other, you know, criminal activity fees that people pay. It's collected as a fund and then, you know, given basically to the different states to use for it, especially for that. So she could choose to, she had the money, Sarah Palin, to pay for those rape kits. And she made the victims, female victims, or men could be raped too, of course, the rape victims, to pay for those rape kits. And so, I mean, we need definitely women, progressive women, and we also need other politicians, men, you know, we need men involved in this supporting women's rights as well.
That brings me to another question. Gwen, let me ask you this. You've been an activist for a long time, probably as many months as I have. And I was wondering, have you noticed, have the quality of progressive men improved? I know a lot of women talked about during the anti-Vietnam War days that some of the activist anti-war men were just as much pigs as some of the, should we say, less politically aware. Are you seeing a better class of progressive men now, or do they still need a lot of education in general?
You have to remember that basically, I mean, I look at my nephew as an example. He's a sophomore at Elmhurst College, a football player jock, but he was raised by my sister, his mother, who is like the bat signal liberal of the family. And his father is a very conservative, so he had, you know, the polar diametrics going on there. I think it fully depends on the home environment and how, you know, we've raised these kids, this generation of young people who are coming up, and they're definitely a lot more hip. They're a lot more global in their thinking. They are the racial boundaries that we, even as civil rights workers or whatnot, from the 60s all the way on up, I mean, we don't face the same today. These kids are not facing the same kind of nastiness and isolation, and therefore I think that the quality of thought and the quality of masculine commitment to a movement that is equitable with women, I think it's a given for a lot of these younger people. If a long way around it, yes, I think that the quality of progressive men is a lot more natural than it was during the late 70s and the 60s when they were protesting the Vietnam War. And also, I think what these kids are facing right now, too, is dealing with looking at, of course, being very, very quickly, they get the lesson of how politics works because they were also galvanized to work for the grassroots of the Obama campaign, and many of them are incredibly disappointed and disaffected right now by what's transpired. So they're learning very quickly. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
For making the point.
Absolutely.
And also another thing is, too, one more thing before I shut up, is that basically they're also watching something that I don't remember seeing the way I'm seeing it now, and that is the meanness, the actual unkindness and cruelty of the politics of the grand old party that's going on right now. I mean, you know, having people cry out, yes, let somebody die, the cruelty and the ignorance of someone who says that a vaccine that can save children's lives is really a political tool for a woman with not much intelligence to come out and say that, which I think is probably a lie, that she talked to a woman whose child is mentally retarded because of it. These young people are being schooled on these politics, and they're coming out of homes where usually there's a pretty clear proactive feminist and equanimity in the house as far as politics go. I think the ones who are engaged in politics.
Let me ask M&A and Susanna this question. You know, more and more people are aware of the difficulties of the economic situation in front of us. I'd like you both to react and what this economic difficulty means to women. M&A and Susanna, could you react to that?
You want to go,
I think what, especially when we're talking about healthcare. What we're seeing, because we focus so much on jobs every day and talking about the governor being a job-killing anti-middle-class governor, is that we're seeing not only unemployment, but we're seeing underemployment. So you've got folks who are getting laid off from jobs that they've had for 20 years that have health care benefits, that have pensions, that have, you know, that have other types of benefits like family leave, that kind of thing, who are being forced to go out and find work now in a sector that, you know, like either, you know, either like part-time minimum wage jobs that don't provide health care, that don't provide leave for your family, that don't provide things like paid sick days. So being a woman and having particular health needs, oftentimes that aren't even covered by insurance, even when you have it, having particular health needs that are really critical to her survival, her ability to have a family, not having those paid for is really key. But then also, you know, having to work sometimes 2 to 3 jobs to then, like, minimum wage or just above minimum wage jobs just to make the mortgage, you know, is less time with your family, less time with your kids when they're sick, less time with them at critical points in their development when that makes them good people and makes them good citizens in this world. So I think in particular when you're talking about women and you're talking about this phenomenon, I mean, Rick Scott is, you know, wants to be just like Rick Perry, wants to emanate everything in Texas, but what he doesn't want to tell you about Texas is Texas has the highest number of below minimum wage paying jobs of any state in the country and the highest number of at minimum wage jobs in the entire country. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, as bad as Rick Scott is, you know, we don't need another Rick. And sorry, Rick's feedback. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Change her name. But, I mean, I think in particular to women, when you're talking about the joblessness and the unemployment and underemployment, those are particular things that are going to hit women even harder and their families. So.
Yeah, and I think what I can add to it is that American women of all races are hardest hit by poverty, but especially minorities and migrant women, they're at the bottom of the bottom, basically. So they get affected worse, and the single mothers, of course, and the health issues, very important to raising children. And women in poverty struggle to keep their children healthy and safe, and which adds to the stress of paying the rent, finding, you know, adequate childcare. So definitely women are more adversely affected by what's going on in job loss, or usually the females are the first ones to let go, you know, receive the pink slip. So it is very important that it's affecting.
And I can't help but think that the other fallout that goes too often unmentioned simply because of the brutality of the economics is that the stress brings on more violence in families, more violence against women and children. And that, for all the talk I hear about the economy, I don't hear any mention of that. And that's got to be the iceberg that we're not talking about.
And Rick, yeah, that brings up a key point, too, that the Republican legislature, I think it was a year or two ago, actually increased fees on divorce filings. So now what you're seeing is sometimes in a very violent household, when women want to get away from their attacker or they just want to get out of a bad relationship in general, even if it hasn't gotten to the point of turning violent, it is now more expensive in an economy where people are losing their jobs and being underemployed to then file for divorce. So not only not only when you want to get out of it, now they've made it even harder, and that's on top of the job situation, the joblessness situation we're facing. So, good point.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. It's going on, and I can see it around here, around me and my community.
Well, ladies, we're coming down to the end of the game. So let me ask you to please leave us some of your thoughts from your wisdom. And let me start with Gwen, if I may. Gwen, give us some insight. Give us something positive to take away from this.
I think it's really important to remember to listen to each other. We need to keep the dialogues open. And above all, always, I mean, there's just not enough of it anymore. Just common kindness and courtesy. Keep it close.
Thanks, Gwen. Thanks. That's great. Susanna?
Yeah, I would say that as much as we're reeling under the rule of Rick Scott right now, there is a silver lining to this really dark cloud, and that is to remember Pete Wilson, the governor of California, and he was a right-winger who was elected and faced such an enormous backlash to his policies that he is still credited for durable Democratic and progressive victories to this day in California. So I believe that we have been given a moment that if we grab it and we do and we organize around it and we push as hard as we can make Florida a more progressive place coming out of this very dark period in our history. So don't give up. Don't throw in the towel, because this might be the time where we can turn the ship all the way around.
Wow, that's great. Thank you, Susanna. That's awesome. Emanay, how about you? Tell us, leave us on a positive note.
I don't think I can add anything else to these wonderful comments, but I just want to say that we've been through this, you know, from 1937, Great Depression, to here. I believe American people are very hardworking, intelligent, creative, and we can definitely get through this. It's just like the other ladies on the panel, the incredible, remarkable woman on the panel said, that you just need to hang on to each other and believe in ourselves and then inform ourselves. Just really get out there and read and learn and do the background check before you vote for these people and know who you're voting for, know who those people are, you know, stand for. Are they for American people? Are they for American women? Or for, you know, big corporations? So this is very important. Just know who you're voting for.
Well, ladies, thank you so very much. I'm just so honored to have you be guests on our show, and I can't thank you enough. Please keep doing the wonderful work that you're doing, and thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
You keep it up too, Rick. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Ladies, good night. I'm going to leave off with a little bit of music, and we'll talk to you soon. Please, if you ever have any other messages you want to leave for the audience, please just let me know, and you will be back. Thank you. This has been Progressive News Network. I'm your host, Richard Spisak, news director. I want to thank you on behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, on behalf of my wonderful guests tonight, Emanay Dilek, women's rights activist, writer, broadcaster, Susanna Randolph of Florida Watch, and the ineffable, the absolutely amazing Gwen Berry, progressive activist, webcaster, and mystic extraordinaire. This has been Progressive Network. Join us next week when Progressive Network brings you our economy show. Thanks so much. Talk to you again soon. Friends, progressives, work every day to make this a better world. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Richard Spezak, Progressive News Network.